Accutron Watches present The Accutron Show, a time travel through American culture, with your hosts David Graver and Indrani. Visit AccutronWatch.com and discover the brand that has made American history with an all-new proprietary next-generation electrostatic energy movement. Accutron, it's not a timepiece, it's a conversation piece.
Because very often you get dismissed as naive. This is never going to happen. Like, why are you even bothering with this? You should do something else with your life. So it was really, really, nobody can say that once you have a Nobel Peace Prize.
The person you heard at the top of the show is today's guest, Nobel Peace Prize winner, Beatrice Finn, known for her work to prohibit and eliminate nuclear weapons. But first up, me, Indrani Palchaudhary, and David Graver, here on a new episode of The Accutron Show. Stay tuned.
This podcast is presented by Accutron Watches. Visit our website, AccutronWatch.com, and discover our iconic SpaceView 2020 collection, recreating the stunning visual impact of the original open-dial design, combined with an all-new electrostatic energy movement. Time just changed, again. The Accutron SpaceView 2020.
So Beatrice and I first met when I won a Disruptive Innovation Award, and she had been a winner ahead of me, and we were introduced by the founder of the Tribeca Film Festival, who was really excited about creating a new movement together to undo the first Manhattan Project. So we started talking about how to amplify this important work that Beatrice is doing and how to get people to care about something that threatens every one of us, but that most people have forgotten exists, the nuclear threat. So we started talking about that, and then we expanded it into talking about how women can use their voices and the ways in which women are often the object of art and not the subject. But the artists tend to be men. In fact, over 90% of the artists in galleries and exhibitions around the world are men, and yet the vast majority of subjects, especially nude subjects, are women. And so it was looking at how do we recenter women in our popular imagination through art and other ways based on their achievements rather than on their looks.
Was that before her time with ICANN, where she has sort of spearheaded these campaigns to abolish nuclear weapons?
No, that was after she had won the Nobel Prize. And so she was so articulate speaking about the challenges that she faces as a woman in this very difficult work that she's doing, where people doubt a woman's ability to move the mountains that she does. And so we combine these interesting different directions into a series of conversations. And I filmed Beatrice talking about the role of women's empowerment in important issues like nuclear proliferation, elimination. And I think what we realized in our discussions were it's because of the capacities women bring to their work that they're able to create this kind of international coalitions, this kind of awareness of the challenges that all of humanity faces. And we've just really enjoyed our discussions together and our passions, shared passions for finding solutions to the big challenges.
I'm really curious to hear her speak about how she maintains optimism, or if we have reason to be optimistic, just knowing that there is so much darkness out there and our brains have to go to think about all of these, the global connectivity of fear of all of these things that are harming the planet, that we ourselves are doing to harm the other planet and each other. So I hope she can provide a little bit of optimism for us, something to hold on to.
Well, the thing that I find so exciting about Beatrice is that she really represents so many of the ideals, the things that I think that as humans, we should really embrace and be excited to have these capacities, to see the ability to connect with others that are different from us, to find the ways through the darkness and into the light. And she's always brings humor and joy into every conversation.
Well, I have a feeling this is going to be one of our best episodes yet. Thank you for bringing her to the Accutron Show. Everybody stay tuned.
This podcast is presented by Accutron Watches. Visit our website, AccutronWatch.com, and discover our Accutron DNA collection. Reimagined for a new generation, the Accutron DNA combines breakthrough technology, precise engineering, and modern aesthetics to achieve a new level of technical excellence. The Accutron DNA, the new face of time for those who blaze new trails.
Beatrice, just prior to the break, you told us about a tremendous achievement, and it was reason to be optimistic. What are other things that we can hold on to give us hope?
I think we need to think about these issues in a longer perspective. I mean, it feels very, on a day-to-day basis, it feels like we're losing. But if you look over time, and particularly the last 100 years, we made enormous achievement in how we relate to each other and how we protect each other's rights and how we protect civilians. So, you know, of course, after World War II, you know, we saw massive, horrific crimes against humanity. Genocide, we saw, you know, nuclear weapons being used, massive bombings of civilians. But then we created a whole network of institutions and laws, the Geneva Conventions that protect civilians in warfare, human rights treaties, the ban on torture. We started tackling weapons. A ban on biological weapons, a ban on chemical weapons, a ban on landmines and cluster munitions. We stopped nuclear testing. And we didn't see a massive proliferation of nuclear weapons to like 20, 30 countries. I think JFK in the early 60s said he was predicting that in the next 20 years, like 20, 30 countries would have nuclear weapons. That didn't happen because we fought to stop it. So I think we have to really think about that. And just this summer, for example, they announced that all the chemical weapons under the Chemical Weapons Convention were completely eliminated. And, like, yes, there's still loopholes, and there's still, like, certain things that are not covered by the treaty. It doesn't mean that everything is flawless and perfect and solved. But we made this massive... We can't take that for granted. We did that because we sort of saw that this is a really bad weapon. We shouldn't be using it, or let's stop it. So there's definitely possible to do really great things. And I think when we see kind of humanity... I mean, we see the news and we were so upset about what's happening. It's also because we've raised our expectations right now. We have all these rules. We have all these norms. We should be better than that. And that's why we also are angrier right now. Things that were normal 50 years ago is no longer normal and we're outraged. So I think we have to take heart in that and not see it as a win or lose. The world is never going to be perfect. We're never going to be done with this work. It's just ongoing constantly. But instead of letting that depress us, we should just take heart in that this is part of being a human. This is how we act. We're always going to improve things. We're always going to have to be mindful of people's rights and never take our eyes off, because even if we think we win, we might have setbacks.
Yes.
Yeah.
But every day that we don't set off a nuclear weapon is a win, right?
Absolutely. And we shouldn't take that for granted. I mean, there's been times where we've been so close. There's been, you know, accidents, but also there's been leaders at times who could have used nuclear weapons. And the fact that regular people have demonstrated, that have, you know, talked about the horrors of nuclear weapons, that survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and nuclear test sites have consistently warned about things, has also raised the threshold and raised the taboo, making it really politically difficult for certain leaders. I mean, some of these people are not great people. They would have, you know, easily been able to push the button at some point during history. So every day that they don't, let's not take that for granted. Like, we are also stopping them every day from using these weapons.
When you and I first started speaking and looking at how can we amplify the awareness of nuclear weapons, the awareness that the risk is much greater now even than it was when we talked about it all the time, and the public was just not interested. It felt like such an old thing. And now we've had this film, Oppenheimer, and so many people are talking about nuclear weapons again. For me, I felt a huge omission of not including the perspectives of the Japanese people who suffered so terribly from nuclear weapons. Well, what are your thoughts on this film, and has it advanced the conversation? What did it leave out?
I mean, first of all, it's an incredible film as a, you know, just a piece of art. I think it's really, really remarkable. I agree very much that it leaves out certain things, the experiences of the Japanese people, the civilians in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I mean, this was war crimes. I mean, it really was. We didn't have that definition in that way, but like, if we look at it today, it's not acceptable to wipe out a whole city. It also left out indigenous people in the United States where nuclear weapons were tested. I think there's this scene where he says, no, there's nobody here. But of course, we know that there were people here, there. And also we know that the radiation spread with the wind. So there is no space where you don't impact other people. So I think that these are things that are missing. But I also think that the movie was opportunities for people to rediscover the nuclear weapons issue, to think about it today, also in the context of it being released as we're seeing a war in Ukraine where Russia's threatened to use these weapons. It's become very current, and we see a very kind of back to a very difficult global kind of situation, and geopolitics is sort of thornier than ever. So I think that nuclear weapons are very much back, and the movie was a big part of driving these conversations. We know from the 80s, this classic movie, The Day After, I think, that really changed things. And people say that it stopped the nuclear war. It really, you know, led to Reagan and Gorbachev, and not just the movie, right, but the whole kind of public conversation that it stimulated and the protest that was there, that it kind of led to reduction of nuclear weapons. So I think that these movies can really have a great impact, but it's not enough on its own, right? Like, you have to have people acting on it.
Yeah, I'm excited about the movies we're talking about to really help advance these conversations. Mm.
Speaking of art, in maybe 2021, 2022, I saw a film called The Bomb at 75 at Pioneer Works in Brooklyn, and I believe you provided ancillary interviews for that. How important is art to convey the message of fear, or not fear, concern for nuclear weapons?
I think it's so, so important. It's really, really central. In a way, you know, you can write all the briefing papers you want and all the scientific reports you want, but if it doesn't move people, then it's not going to change things, really. So I think there's not one thing that's going to solve this problem, but I think shifting people's perceptions of the weapon, of who's impacted by the weapon, of what we're working towards, opening up our imagination for solving these kind of big problems. I think art is so central for that. So a lot of the work that we've been doing in my job has been to write the treaty, right? This kind of piece of paper, and it's very bureaucratic words, and we fight about commas and paragraphs here and there. And, you know, it's very technical work, but like, in order to make sense of it, like, you have to take a treaty. It's only going to have an impact if people believe in it and if people kind of change their perceptions based on it. So I see very much as culture and art as the kind of implementation of law, right? If people, their hearts and minds don't believe in the law, then it doesn't work. It doesn't change things, right? So to me, like, we wrote the treaty, and now we need culture and art to really take this. Nuclear weapons are illegal. They're unacceptable. We shouldn't have them, and make that into something people believe in. And I think that that's where art plays an incredible role. There's this new network called Artists Against the Bomb, which is a collective of a huge amount of artists. I think it's like 100 or 120 right now. From really famous artists to new up-and-coming emerging artists that... they do these protest posters. So they do sort of black and white protest posters that can be also printed and shared in galleries all over the world. So it's really, I love seeing that, because I think it's such a great contribution to the conversations. And it's stimulating people that will not pick up a science report maybe and read it in the same way.
That is so very inspiring. More from Beatrice when we're back on the Accutron Show.
This podcast is presented by Accutron Watches. Visit our website, AccutronWatch.com, and discover our legacy collection. Reviving some of the most memorable Accutron watches from the 60s and 70s, the legacy collection combines timeless design with the technical excellence of Swiss watchmaking, each limited to 600 individually numbered pieces. The Accutron Legacy Collection, inspired by the past, built for your future.
And we're back with Beatrice Finn discussing the abolition of nuclear weapons.
Seeing your passion for this and seeing these structures you've created, these systems, these treaties, I'm very curious to know, what are your next steps? I heard that you're stepping down from ICANN.
Yeah, I mean, I was the executive director of ICANN for about 9 years and had an incredible time. I mean, I love this movement. I think it's really such a great group of organizations and people part of it. But I think everyone needs change, right? And both the organization itself needs new leaders, and people need to, I think in movements in general, people need to stop hogging space. And if you want other people to take up space, you need to give space. So for me, it was important to let other people take the spotlight and the leadership in this. And I wanted to also spend a little bit of time thinking bigger than nuclear weapons. I mean, nuclear weapons is very central to a lot of the problems in the world. Like, it's a very kind of, this cancer at the root of the international system. But I think also there's so many other parallel issues that we have to connect with. So I wanted to spend more time thinking about international law as a concept. I mean, for me, it's such an important time right now where all of our problems are global and they spread across borders, and they will not stop at one country, right? They will go, we've seen them with COVID, we see it with artificial intelligence and the threat and the sort of challenges around that. We see that with climate change, of course, migration issues. No country can solve these issues on their own. But at the same time, as those kind of threats become more and more global, countries and leaders seem to retract into being more nationalistic and sort of thinking that they can protect their own country. But you can't. You have to work together with others. So I wanted to work a little bit now on using the stuff that I learned at ICANN and I learned about nuclear weapons and thinking about how we can get people to believe more in international law. It's not flawless. It doesn't always work, but it's a really good tool to kind of create these common norms in the world, like these certain principles that we have, and we need to strengthen that, not weaken it at this point. So I'm really excited about spending some time to think how these issues relate to each other, how nuclear weapons, climate change, international justice, how they kind of work together, and the sort of intersectionality between all of these issues.
If people wanted to be involved, should they ask, how can I help? Is that how they should approach it? Is that how they should look at it?
I mean, of course, you want to ask, how can I help? But I also think it's really important that people don't think that there's one way of doing this. These issues are long-term. We're not going to solve them by just doing one action and one activity. I think what's really important is that you connect with other people working on the same issues and sort of relate to each other and know what other people are doing. But then also think about sort of what am I good at? What am I doing? Very often we think that, we see a picture of Greta Thunberg, like, should I be doing that? And that's not for everyone. And that's not also the most effective use. So I really like the idea of people using their existing skills, their existing networks, their communities that they're already a part of. And ICANN is a great way of exemplifying that. We have lawyers and they do the legal analysis, and we have scientists and they do the science and the reports. We have TikTok kids, right, that do dances and educate people there. We have religious leaders and they will use their sort of networks. We have unionists, they use their trade unions to kind of communicate these things. So figuring out where you already have power and influence and where you have skills and how can you use that for the cause. And I think that goes not just on nuclear weapons, it's on climate change. Not everyone can chain themselves to an oil field or something like that. But if you're a marketing person, how can you use your skills to that? If you're a banker, how can you use your skills and how can you use your area where you influence things? But I think what's important is also then to connect with others so that you don't feel alone. Because if you only do your little small part, which is all anyone can do, right? We can just do your part. But you need to know that people are doing other parts, right? And how it connects, because then you feel part of a movement.
Amazing.
How do you deal with the stresses? As a movement maker myself, as an artist and an activist, there is so much stress and dealing with these, when you look at the problems as a whole, it can be overwhelming.
I throw a lot of parties. it's been a very central strategy, genuinely, in ICANN and in the movement against nuclear weapons, is that you have to have fun while doing this, because it's really hard to stick with something if you see it as homework or like an obligation I have to do. It's really boring, but I have to do it. Like, you're not going to stick with this for a very long time. And I think it's really important to think about it that way, that we're only going to win and we're only going to succeed with these things if we are in it for the long haul. So figuring out first, like, how to use your own skills and not try to be someone who you're not, but then also have fun in the process. I mean, I've made so many friends. Some of my best friends are part of this movement. We've done so many fun things together, and it's not a burden to think about destruction and death, even if it sounds really bizarre when I say it, right? But it's, of course, there's moments when you're down and you feel hopeless, but then every time we get together with people, I feel really re-energized and positive about it. And I think that's very human. Like, this, you know, there's so much death and destruction and like awful things happening in the world, but then when you're with people and you have this human connection and you can feel that sort of spark, and you can feel like, I don't always care if we win or not. I just like being with these people, and I like being with them, and I like having fun with them. And, you know, we play music and we make drinks and we eat food, and it's a way of living in a way, and create a community that makes sense to you no matter what happens.
It's so beautiful, and the idea that creating culture, creating this culture of peace and of taking care of the most vulnerable, that could be the greatest luxury too, right? The greatest joy, knowing that you're
doing what
you can.
And I think also sort of people have shown that it's, people are really happy when they are in service of others. And I think we forget that sometimes in this very hyper-individualistic society where we're very focused on, like, well, what can you do for me, or what can I get out of this, is that it's extremely rewarding to be a part of something bigger. I mean, I'm a massive football fan, like actual soccer in America, but football. And there's something magic, right, about being in a stadium with like loads of people, and they're really random. I don't know them. And like these 11 people who run around on this field, like I actually don't like know them, right? But somehow you have this massive feeling together with a lot of other people, and it creates something kind of really magical.
Something tactile, something you can really hold on to.
And I think there's such a human need, right, to feel a part of something bigger. And so I see these movements and to try to recreate that sort of feeling of like, oh, I'm part of something bigger.
Yeah.
Speaking of feelings, you won one of the most notable global accolades in the world. I'm curious to know how you felt when you won the Nobel Peace Prize, and what doors it opened for you following its reception.
It was an incredibly, like, sort of overwhelming feeling. I mean, we were a very small, like, movement that didn't have a lot of attention. Nobody really cared about us. So suddenly to be kind of sort of thrust into the spotlight, I mean, it's a huge thing, right? And it's really overwhelming, and everyone wanted to talk to us, and you kind of feel like, oh, we're not ready for this attention. Like, we need to kind of build up to it. But it was really incredible. And it was a moment when I got to Oslo for the ceremony, and the Nobel Committee asked me to sign their big guest book, the sort of laureate book. And I sort of flipped through the pages and see all of these names, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, Desmond Tutu, Malala, like all of these people that, you know, and I was like so nervous, like pen shaking, like my signature is so unworthy in this society, in this kind of group of people. So it was like really quite overwhelming. I kind of feel like, we should win it again, because maybe now we know what we're doing. but it was also incredibly remarkable. And I think in particularly because as a civil society activist and these kind of movements, there's so little reward in that way, or like external reward. Internal, yes, like much of it. But most of the tasks that you're doing, most of the activities that you're doing, nobody cares about, right? You call the politicians, you talk to them, they say no. And you nag and you nag and they say no. And, you know, there's like so many closed doors, so much, you know, effort, and you sit in this little like events and nobody really shows up, and you have these little petitions, and like, does anyone listen? So But each one of those like builds a massive movement. But when it succeeds, it's also very hard to take credit for it because you don't know if it wasn't my petition that made it happen, right? It's just a collective thing. But the Nobel Prize gives you this kind of recognition that's so rare in this field, and what makes it so special. And it was just such a beautiful thing in Oslo as well to have so many different representatives of the movement, from survivors of Hiroshima to and people who've been working on this for like literally 75 years to young people that had just entered the movement like a few months before. And everyone was celebrating and feeling really kind of recognized, like somebody noticed all of this work and somebody understood that it actually was important work. So it was really kind of a triumphant feeling, like, aha, like they got it. Like the Nobel Committee got it and everyone got it and we get this reward. And it definitely gave you that sort of stamp of approval because very often you get dismissed as naive. This is never going to happen. Like, why are you even bothering with this? You should do something else with your life. So it was really, really, nobody can say that once you have a Nobel Peace Prize. And that's a very nice feeling. And I wish, you know, it's something that we want to share with all of civil society, even those movements that don't get the Nobel Peace Prize. It doesn't mean that they are not just as important as ours. And just to remember that this kind of work, and to, so, you know, I just want to take this opportunity to shout out to everyone who's doing this kind of work, right? For all the different causes, because it's so important and all very worthy of a prize.
Beatrice, thank you for changing the world. Thank you for taking time to be with us here today on the Accutron Show.
And thank you for making it so much fun to look at these big issues.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Accutron Show. To listen to all of our shows, visit AccutronWatch.com. Remember to check out our special edition Accutron products in collaboration with La Paulina Cigars, Esterbrook Pens, Asseline Publishing, and Stave Puzzles. To learn more about the world of Accutron, follow us on Instagram at Accutron Watch. From New York City, until next time, Accutron Time. This is Bill McCuddy.